Welcome back to the Look and Sound of Leadership, an ongoing series of executive coaching tips designed to help you be perceived in the workplace the way you want to be perceived. I'm Tom Henschel, your executive coach, and today we're talking about how to disarm a trigger. Meg liked having things in order. As she saw it, order happened when people, including herself, followed rules. Living by rules gave Meg fierce certainty. Meg was given a coach because people were often upset with her. I asked her what she knew about people being upset with her. She said, "My standards are naturally high. I'm not unreasonable, but I know what good work looks like, and I'm not going to accept anything less." "And that upsets people?" I asked. "I guess so. I guess people don't like being told they've missed the mark, but I'm sorry, that's my job." I said, "Suppose I was the one who missed the mark, what would I hear from you?" She gave a laugh. "Well, you'd hear something different today than a year ago. This woman from HR told me I should start with questions. So now, before I tell them what needs fixing, I do a little investigating." "Investigating?" I asked. "What are you investigating?" "What went wrong," she said. "Or at least their version of what went wrong. But usually it's pretty clear that whatever happened, they should have known better. These are not junior people." I asked, "Has it made a difference, starting with questions? Are people less upset with you?" "To be honest, Tom, no, I don't think it's made much of a difference at all. People are still upset with me." "That's interesting," I said. "So can I go back to that question I asked? Suppose I was the guy who missed the mark. You start by asking questions. After that, what would I hear from you?" She said, "Probably something like, 'What you brought me doesn't match the requirements. Go back and make sure you meet all the requirements. There's not much else to say.'" I asked, "And this exchange is upsetting people?" "I think so, yeah," she answered. I paused, considering, and then asked, "Would you agree something's missing?" "What do you mean?" she asked. "Well, what you told me has no trigger. I mean, you're giving feedback. I agree, that's your job. But there's nothing in that story for a reasonable person to get upset about. But reasonable people are getting upset. So I'm thinking there's a trigger hidden somewhere in that story, and our job might be to find it." "Like a blind spot?" she asked. "Well, I don't know, Meg, maybe. Can I ask a different question?" "Sure," she said. "Let's go back to you telling me I have to redo the work, meet all the requirements. So those are your words. What are your thoughts? What are you thinking about me?" She said that, "I hope you're not an idiot. Like I said, these are not junior people, Tom. They should know better. And when they don't, I worry that maybe they're an idiot." "Strong feelings," I said. "All right. If I've hired idiots, it's going to be a problem," she said. I smiled at her and asked, "How good an actress are you?" "What? No, I'm not an actress. I do not like being the center of attention." I smiled, "I mean an everyday actress. You know, how good are you at telling someone, 'Why, bless your heart,' but you're really thinking you wish they'd drop dead?" "Oh," she said, "I am the worst poker player ever. My wife knows. Don't tell me anything she wants kept secret." "But wait," I said, "you're thinking your direct reports are idiots. Aren't they going to see that on your face?" A bit alarmed, she said, "I don't know. I hope not. But they probably do, don't they?" I nodded, saying, "Well, if you're the worst poker player ever, yeah, they probably do." She thought, and then drew herself up. "But hold on, Tom. What's wrong if they do see that I think they should have known better? They should have. If they don't know better, our team is in trouble." I held up a finger. "You said, if they don't know better, our team is in trouble. First, Meg, it's not an if condition. It's the actual real-life condition. They did not know better. They made that mistake. That happened. Second, why would that mistake mean the team is in trouble? I don't see how that follows." She said, "If we're making rookie mistakes, okay, well, maybe we're not in trouble, but come on, it doesn't bode well." I didn't say anything. She said, "Oh, come on, you can't tell me that the quality of the work doesn't matter." I cocked a brow and, smiling, said, "Quality matters, I agree, but I don't think people are upset with you because you want quality." She stopped. "Did you figure out the trigger?" "Maybe," I said. I'm thinking maybe the trigger is embedded in the idea that anyone should know better about anything ever. She said rather meekly, "But they should have." I smiled. "I understand the feeling, but here's my concern. As soon as I think you should have known better, I've diminished you. I've judged you, and I have found you lacking. It's a shaming statement. Shame on you for not knowing better. No one likes to feel diminished or shamed. So yes, I think it's possible your judgment could be triggering people to be upset with you." Openly, without any defense, she asked, "Is that what they're getting from me, judgment?" I shrugged. "I don't know. I mean, for myself, speaking as someone who knows a lot about being judgy, I learned that when I could notice myself thinking those words, it was guaranteed that I was being judgy. Learning to hear those words like an alarm bell raised my awareness. I learned to think of those words as a thinking error." Checking to be sure, she said, "The words you're talking about are, you should have known better?" I nodded yes. She asked, "Why are they a thinking error?" I gave a mock scowl and pointed at her. "Meg, you should have known better. You should have known exactly what I was thinking and been able to anticipate what was important to me and to know how I was going to react. You should have been able to mind read me, Meg. Jeez, come on." She smiled. "Okay, I see why it's a thinking error. That's funny. Okay. So what did you mean when you said it was guaranteed you were being judgy?" I stopped and looked away. Then coming back to her, I said, "The part of me that generates the idea you should have known better is the same part of me that takes things personally. I am upset because you didn't do what I wanted in the way I wanted you to do it. The part of me that takes your actions personally feels victimized. It is natural when I feel victimized, I'm going to protect myself by judging the other person. That's what we do. We diminish the other person to protect ourselves." Now it was her turn to look away. She thought, then said, "You know what I picture? A sneer, a classic lip curl. God, my mom did that like a champ. Ooh, I hope I'm not doing that to people. That'd be awful." I watched. Finally, turning back to me, she said, "Judgment is me thinking I'm better than them, isn't it? I've heard that before. People tell me that I think that I'm better than them." "Huh," I said. "What do you think about that?" "Well," she said, "I don't mean to. I don't think I'm better than anyone. I'm really good at some things. I mean, like, really good, and I always have been. But there's plenty that I am not good at, and I know that." I smiled. "Those things that you're not good at, do you care about them? I'm guessing when you do care about something, you get good at it. Do you care about the things you aren't good at?" She gave a chuckle. "No. One of our girls is into this particular board game. She wants me to play it with her all the time, but I'm horrible at it because it's exactly that. I just don't care. I keep screwing up the rules." I asked, "Does she get impatient with you?" She laughed. "You mean, does she say, 'Mom, you should know better by now?'" "No, she doesn't, but she would be well within her rights if she did." I said, "I asked about caring because a lot of people aren't as judgy about things that they don't care about. And that may be true for you. I don't know." Looking away again, she said, "I don't want to judge people. I don't want to be my mom with the lip curl. I'm going to work on this. Have you got any good ideas for me?" "I have one to get you started. You know, one way to become less judgmental would be to hunt for the switch inside yourself that controls all that judgment. And once you find that switch, learn to turn it off. I think you can do that work. I think it's long, and I think there's a shortcut that leads to the same place. The shortcut is acceptance." I paused, but she was watching me, waiting. I went on. "Acceptance. Accept that people make those mistakes. Accept that your daughter wants to play a game you hate. And accept that people will not mind read you. Accept whatever has happened is now a fact. Accept the facts in your life and then figure out what you want to do next. If you can accept that people do things for their own reasons, not yours, what is there to judge? She said, I'm not sure I can imagine a world like that. Well, I said, you've begun. Meg turned her prodigious brain power on acceptance. It was harder than she expected, but she found when she was able to be more accepting, it was easier to show up with the look and sound of leadership. This is one of those episodes that grew directly out of my coaching. Over the course of 1 month, I heard 3 different clients all say those words that someone in their life should have known better. It was weird hearing those words over and over from other people because those words have a special place in my life. It starts with my belief that people can feel when they're being judged and they don't like it. Judgment damages relationships. So I am motivated to manage that judgy part of myself. And I have learned when I hear those words in my head, when I'm thinking that someone should have known better, I use it like an alarm bell to tell me I am being judgy and find a way to stop it. So when I hear these words come out of a client's mouth 3 times, it really catches my ear. I wonder what is bringing those words to their surface and what do those words even mean to them? I had that conversation 3 times in the space of a month. Each of the 3 conversations shared a common foundation. None of the people wanted to live in judgment of others. They knew that they were judgmental, and they each believed that displaying their judgment would damage their relationships, and they each wanted a way out of the thinking that would lead them to thinking, you know, someone should know better. That was the starting point that they all shared. But then they all went in different directions, and each of them came up with their own way of managing the part of themselves that thinks someone should know better, the judgmental part of themselves. So I heard them as 3 tools. I want to share the tools with you. First, there was Kellyanne. Kellyanne was worried about micro expressions. Now, I love talking about micro expressions. So, whoa, she and I just jumped into a rabbit hole. It was great. But here's what the conversation came down to. Kellyanne worried that no matter how much she tried to cover it, people would read her judgment in her micro expressions. For the sake of clarity, micro expressions are expressions of feeling that flash across your face involuntarily, and they do not last long. Micro expressions have been clocked at 1/20th of a second. It's faster than a blink. But science shows we see these micro expressions in each other. They influence us. And since it can be an influence tool, Kellyanne wondered, was it even possible to gain control over micro expressions? I said, I thought you could. And then she said she hoped so. She told me she has a brother who's an addict. And when she's around him, she feels it is important to hide her feelings, especially her judgment. Kellyanne's tool for becoming less judgmental was literally manage her face. She wasn't changing her feelings, just how she displayed them. That was her solution when she heard herself say someone in her life should know better. Okay, the second client who used those words, this was Paul. Paul's tool was to start with questions. In the episode, Meg talks about doing this for about a year and then saying, you know, it didn't make much difference and people were still upset with her. But do you remember how she talked about asking questions? She called it an investigation, right? She was digging for what needed fixing. Well, that was not Paul's way of asking questions. When Paul heard himself say something like, you should know better, he vowed that the next thing out of his mouth would be a question, and that maybe the next 4 or 5 things out of his mouth would be questions. Paul forced himself to be curious. It is hard to simply decide to be curious, especially if you're in the middle of feeling convinced about how right you are, right, that someone else should have known better. But that's what Paul did. He shifted to curiosity. He found that when he could ask a real question about something he really wanted the answer to, it was virtually impossible to be in judgment. Curiosity disarmed judgment. Curiosity was Paul's tool. Then there was Celine. For Celine, the tool was her values. For Celine, sitting in judgment of others felt morally wrong. Celine is a force. She has a spine of steel. She knows what she believes, and she wants to live in alignment with her beliefs. One of her beliefs is that everyone's life is theirs to live. She is great about not taking things personally. She is terrific seeing her children as their own autonomous human beings. But she's human too, and so now and then she catches herself in judgment. And when she does, her values bring her back. Showing up in judgment violates her self-image, so she simply refuses to tolerate it in herself. She banishes judgment. That's Celine's tool, values. So, three different tools when you're in judgment. There's self-management, there's curiosity, there's values. I have one more story. Do you remember toward the end of the episode, Meg asked for a tool and I said, acceptance, you know, hey, you should accept this and accept that. And then boom, Meg's story is over. I don't want to blow by acceptance. If you wanted to be even 1 ounce less judgmental, acceptance is the 100% never fail cure. I have a story about someone who is really struggling to find acceptance, and that someone is me. And I will tell you my story right after this month's gratitude. Gratitude this month to my longtime friend, Kim O'Hara. Kim is a book coach who has a podcast called You Should Write a Book About That. She used to work in Hollywood too, so she and I had experiences to share. We talked about how this show gets put together. She's a really gifted interviewer. Gratitude to Kim for such a fun conversation. The link's in the show notes. I hope you'll give it a listen. Gratitude to Marcel Vanderhoof, who hosts the Happy Investor podcast. Marcel's show is targeted to people in the asset management world, but he and I talk primarily about leading teams, and those are skills that are applicable to everyone. So please give it a listen. Links in the show note. Gratitude to Marcel. Thanks so much. Gratitude to old clients. This year, I have heard from clients who go back 8 years, 10 years, 12 years. It has been such a delight. I don't know why it's happening right now, but I am so grateful. Thanks to each of you. Finally, to people who post reviews, you know how crowded the world of podcasting is now. Your reviews make a huge difference. This month, gratitude to Thailand and the poster Thai French. Thank you for your message. I love hearing from other people in the learning and development field, so thank you, thank you. Okay, here is my struggle with acceptance. I have a friend. This is one of the longest relationships I have on this planet. I love this guy like a brother. He has grown children, he has many grandchildren, and he has made a series of choices that have totally alienated him from almost everyone in his family. The way I see it, choices he has made have resulted in the loss of his family. And I do not think it had to go down that way, but he insists he's right, and he refuses to repair anything. Now, can you hear my judgment? I can. I listen to him tell his story, and I judge him harshly. Why? Because I cannot accept what he's doing. Why? Because if it were me, do you hear that? If it were me, if my relationships in my family were in jeopardy, I would do freaking anything to fix it. But that's the phrase, right? If it were me, that's where my judgment kicks in, right? And it's all a huge thinking error. He's not me. He's a separate human being who does his own things for his own reasons. Look, I know that in my head, but in my heart, I think he's wrong. I have judged him. It is hard for me to accept that any healthy human being would choose to cut himself off from his family. It's sad. I do not want to be one more person in this guy's life that he can't talk to. But my judgment, my lack of acceptance may result in the end of our friendship, and that will be a very sad thing. I tell this story to say that acceptance can be hard, and it is an important mindset to nurture. It is, as I said, the 100% never fail antidote to judgment, and judgment damages relationships. If this sparks you at all, I would encourage you to engage with some sort of mindfulness practice. Here's the connection between mindfulness and being judgy. One purpose of any mindfulness practice is self-acceptance. When you practice mindfulness, you have to accept how bad you are at it. And you will be, because everyone is bad at mindfulness. Mindfulness is not something you achieve. It's just something you practice. No one ever crosses any finish line in mindfulness. Accepting that you suck at mindfulness can open an amazing window of compassion for yourself and for others. So mindfulness is a tool that you might use to manage the judgy part of you. There's lots of mindfulness resources out there for you. Two of them are episodes of this show. I've done two episodes on mindfulness. The links are in the show notes. If you prefer to learn by reading, I hope you know that all the episodes are available as transcripts, and you can download them. They're all in the library on the Essential Communications website. It's essentialcom.com, essentialcom with two m's.com. The PDFs of every episode are there. They're all free. Please help yourself. When you're in the library, this episode is sorted in three categories: managing yourself, self-talk, and personal growth and self-development. Five related episodes you might listen to are blind spots, creating devoted followers. By the way, I talk about micro-expressions in that episode too, but it's from a whole other angle. Taming the wild child. If you haven't heard this episode, give it a listen. There's a life-changing tool in there. It has changed so many people's lives, including mine. Give it a listen. Another episode would be thinking errors and the many parts of you. Okay, that's it from me. Until next time, I'm Tom Henschel. Thanks so much for listening.